Everybody having a great conference? Yeah? Learning a lot? Hope you learned something today here. I'm Lance Delano, and I'm from the SQL Server team. And we're going to talk about developing and managing a BI semantic model. And just for me to get a sense for who's in the room, if you are a SharePoint admin, would you raise your hand? If you are a developer, raise your hand. Ah, I have to change my talk now. How many of you guys have worked with pivot tables? Great. All right. Okay, good. And how many of you guys have used what was formerly known as BIDS, but is now known as SSDT-BI. You like that name? Okay, great. Well, let me change my demo a little bit here. I'm glad I asked those questions. For those of you that have worked with Power Pivot, how many of you, and also BIDS, how many of you start your work in Excel and then eventually end up in Visual Studio / BIDS? How many of you guys start and do almost all of your work inside of BIDS? Okay, great. All right, so today what we're going to do is talk about sort of the five keys to building up a BI semantic model in Tabular. And we're going to, the five things are building relationships, hierarchies, dimensions, building custom formulas, calculated fields as they're now called in Excel, called measures as you well know, and then the kind of properties that you need to set inside your model to make things show up well inside of Power View and Power Pivot. So those are the five things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about as well, I'll give you a sneak peek at SSDT Dash BI, which we announced last week, will be shipping in the early part of next year as well. So that's what we're going to do today. So we're going to talk about those five things you should do. And so with that, I'm going to spend most of my time here, however, in demo land. And to get there, I had a little bit of problems getting started here. I want to start with the sort of begin at the end story. So this is the place we want to end up, right? We want to end up in a place where you have nice pivot tables, you can drill in as soon as it's warmed up. This is the problem with running SharePoint, Visual Studio, Excel, anyway, lots of things on your machine. There we go. You want to be able to drill in here. You want to be able to, in the pivot charts, to be able to drill in, drill up. And then similarly, with Power View, you want to get the same kind of experience. You want to enable the, how do we enable that self-service BI story as a BI professional? What do we need to do to the BI model in order to kind of get it in the right state? And here we are, Power View, and you're probably well familiar with this as well. So I can click on this and explore it, and I can change the fields in terms of what I get. So that's where we want to end up. And in order to show where we end up, I want to start sort of at the beginning and make sure that we're starting with the right sort of foundation here. For those of you who have worked with, how many of you guys have worked with multidimensional? Okay, great. So on the left, we have, over here, we have kind of the picture of the way the end user or the business user thinks about it. And this is pretty straightforward because we have all aggregation formulas going on in here. We can transform that into this version. We can put titles on it. And this is the raw format that we really like to work with in tabular model. If you're familiar with multidimensional, you know that we can handle as well this kind of relationship where we have a formulaic relationship going on. You can transform this, but it doesn't work very well in tabular. In fact, if you there's some things you can kind of do to sort of get it to work, but really if you want that kind of a relationship, a financial reporting relationship, you probably still want to be in multidimensional. For tabular, if you think about it, what we're going to do is we're going to take a sum of these numbers and or an aggregate of some kind, and then allow you to slice it and dice it every which way you might like. And the thing that we're going to use for that is something called a filter context. So let's begin from scratch. Whoops, let's go here, new blank worksheet. All right, so in the previous version of Excel, Power Pivot was an add-in. And as an add-in, you had to go get it and download it. And here you see it showing up right here right now, but there's two things you need in order to enable it. First of all, you need the right version of Excel. So you need the Pro Plus Pack, or whatever it's called. In that, you get a couple of features in addition to Power Pivot. And then you need to turn it on. So if you come here, go to Options, we go to Add-ins, we go to COM Add-ins, and we say Go. And this is where you will enable Power Pivot. Now, when I say enable Power Pivot, I don't mean to say that Power Pivot isn't there. I did say that we ship with Excel, and that's true. The native Excel engine now has the X-Velocity engine embedded inside of it. What you get when you get the Power Pivot tab is you get additional modeling capabilities that you don't have with the native Excel. So there's a set of things that you get, which I'll show you, which are native to Excel, native to Power Pivot, but the X-Velocity engine itself is actually built in. But there's places in when it gets enabled and places when it does not. So we'll start here. Let's go ahead and go to data, and let's go ahead and insert some data. I have a couple of options here, and you can see I can bring it in from analysis services or whatever. I'm going to bring in from SQL Server here. Okay, and I'm going to bring in, this is the relational database Contoso. It's not the analysis services version, despite the fact that it's named DW. And if I just did my native insert of data from here, I would not be using the X-Velocity engine. However, when I select this, enable the selection of multiple tables, then Excel will default to the X-Velocity engine. Even if I only pick one table, okay? So what I'm going to do is come on down here to Fact Sales, and then I'm going to go ahead and select related tables. And you'll notice here that it's going to import the relationships between those selected tables, and that's the first thing. Now, if you're bringing data in from a relational source and it has foreign keys, a lot of these relationships just come for free. But if you are working with non-relational sources and you need to join things up, you need to add those, and I'll show you how to do that later. I'm going to unselect one table right here, name date, which I'll come back to in a minute. So this is all good, and we hit finish. I'm going to bring it into a pivot table report. All right, so now the fact sales table has about 3 million rows, so it's going to go ahead and bring those in, and so it's processing here. And while we do that, using the X-Velocity engine, we compress. We get about a 10-to-1 ratio, so it can bring in a lot of rows, but even though we can bring in a lot of rows, you should be careful about what you actually bring in. So columns that have what are called high cardinality, in other words, they're unique for a given table, we can't compress. But columns that have, whether it's an online sale or a regular sale, there's only four values. We can compress those pretty well. So you should be careful when you provision a data source to only bring in the columns that you really need. If there are a number of alternate keys, for instance, that are there that are extraneous, that don't really help, then you should probably not bring them in. So let's go ahead and look. So we're ready to start slicing and dicing here. But before we do, I want to go into Power Pivot, and let's go ahead and look at what we brought in and talk briefly about this is diagram view. So you can see the relationships are here. Now, if I go to, here we go. If I go here to table, for instance, and here we go, table properties. This UI used to be in the wizard itself. Here's where I can choose which columns I actually want to bring in. I can choose to not bring them in or bring them in. I can choose to filter as well. I might want to get, this is a small table, but I might choose not to get everything, and I can choose to go ahead and filter here, just using the Excel kind of normal format. Okay, so that's what I've brought in. So now I'm going to go ahead and bring over. Fax sales. Where do you go? There we go, sales amount. All right, so now I have some of sales amount sitting over here. So this is the total at the bottom of that column we were looking at, right? So now I can choose to pivot this any way I like. So I can bring in, say, for instance, channel manufacturer. See, I want to bring in, say, a channel name. And I could bring in, say, manufacturer. And I'm ready to slice and dice, right? Okay, so what's going on here? What's going on is that at any one of these given cell intersections, I have something that's called a filter context. I've only written one formula. In fact, I haven't written any formulas. All I did was drag this over here. But if I go look in Power Pivot itself, and I go to the fact table, down here is something new called the calculated field grid. If I go to advanced, and I say show implicit fields, implicit calculated fields, I can see there's actually a formula here. All right? But this is an implicit one. We created it for you automatically, behind the scenes. And sometimes, as you'll see later in the product, it's okay for you to have implicit fields, but sometimes you need explicit ones. So I can, in here, I could add, for instance, I could go ahead and sum this up. And now I have an explicit formula, because I wrote it. And the formula syntax here is I just take the column name, I prepend it with sum of, and then I have a summation formula, and then I have total cost. And total cost is working on the column name. It's not working on cells and rows, it's working on the column name. So this is the only, before I wrote this, this formula right here is the only formula that I currently have right now. So if I go back to Excel, you could ask the question, how is it then, if there's no formulas, that these things are being calculated? It's being calculated by something called a filter context. So the filter context for this number right here is we take the sum of everything, and then we're going to filter it by reseller and Fabricum. And that's how it does it. All right? So that's what we're doing. We're doing all the summations for you automatically, simply. All right? Now, that's why, by the way, if we go back to the first thing we were showing you, that's why the sales minus COGS doesn't work as well, because we can do the aggregation really, really simply. But without you telling us more and without us giving you features to tell us more, it's hard for us to kind of do the sales minus COGS story. There's things you can do, like I said, to kind of simulate getting there, but you don't get quite the same picture that the business user wants. All right, so that's what's going on here from a filter context standpoint. So what I can do at this point, if I go back to, where'd it go? I want this guy. If I go back here to fax sales, these measures, or these to be called measures, now we're calling them calculated fields. These calculated fields are things that I can write. They're a formula, it's a formula language that I can work with. It's very similar to Excel. However, it deals with columns instead of rows and columns in terms of absolute references. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to add a simple formula. I'm going to say equals, and I'm going to say sales amount minus total cost. All right? That's written in terms of columns, and this is called a calculated column. If I hit OK, what it's going to do now is it's going to put that value in for every row. And now, a calculated column is one that actually gets stored in the data store, as contrasted with the thing that I showed you in the spreadsheet, which is calculated on the fly. So this is an important thing to understand. If there are some values that you want to always be there that can be calculated on a row-by-row basis, similar to the way you would, say, in a relational database, you can calculate them as you can put them in as a calculated column, and they'll stick around. So I'm going to rename this guy to something that's a bit more intuitive, unit profit. And so I have a couple of formulas I've written. I have a unit profit calculated column that I've written. I have an implicit formula down there at the bottom of sales amount, which is sum of sales amount. And I have an explicit formula that I wrote, or used a button to get it there, which is sum of total sales. Great. Yeah. Correct. This is all on the client side. This is all within Excel. Even though there are 3 million rows, it's all local. Okay? Great. All right. So this kind of gives you the beginning of an understanding of I've got these three things going on. I've got calculated columns, I've got implicit calculations, and I've got explicit calculations, which are calculated fields. All right. So. So this is interesting. So now if I wanted to do, where's my time dimension? I left that out on purpose. But I'd like to kind of drill in by time. I'd like to add that to my model. So what I'm going to do here, actually, I'm going to go back here to this guy. What I did, the Contoso database actually has sitting within it a dimension table called dimdate. And I copied it, actually downloaded it into this other spreadsheet here. And I'm going to copy it here. But I want to talk for a moment or two about this dimension in particular and dimensions and why they're important. So if you look at this dimension, it's pretty interesting. It's got 3,600 rows or something like that. And over here on the left, I have a unique value that identifies each row. It's just an integer value. And then to the right of that, I've got a full date label, a date description, and then we'll come back to this column here in a second. But you can see these are all the kinds of interesting dates that would make it interesting to be able to do slicing and dicing. But if you look over here to the far right, we have something else going on. It's fiscal year. How many of you guys work at a company that has a unique fiscal year that's different from your calendar year. Great. So if you want to slice and dice on fiscal year, you couldn't just rely on some function to automatically give you that date. You'd have to tell it when your fiscal year is. And if you have those strange sort of 5-5-4 months, you know, that lead up to the quarter, you have to do some work to actually manage this dimension to get it in the right place. So having this dimension out and separate as something that you can manage is an important thing. Now, I copied it here into Excel for visual purposes, but there's a couple of options you have in terms of how you manage this dimension. You could keep it in the database. You could generate it via a stored procedure. You could have somebody maintain it in an Excel spreadsheet and push it up to the database on a regular basis. What I'm going to do is copy this whole thing and bring it over into the spreadsheet that we've been working with. I'm going to add a new sheet. This time we'll go back and really copy it. Okay, it's pasted and it's a table. Excel was nice enough to recognize that I was going from table to table. If not, I would have to mark it as a table. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to add this to the data model. Doing a little work. I kind of come up here to look in diagram view. And there it is, showing up as dim date long, because I've added some stuff to it. I want to differentiate it from the table that's in Contoso. And you see that I have a date key here, and I have a date key here. So I can just go ahead and drag this relationship out. And I'm connected. Now, if you have, I'm doing this with an existing database where the keys are all going to work really great. But you can imagine if you're bringing in disparate sources, if you can get the keys aligned, then you can just go ahead and connect it right up here in this view. And it'll just work, right? It just works. All right, so am I good to go? Maybe. Let's go back and look. So I've connected this up. Go back to book one. Let's go back here. Let's look at all. Well, here's dim date long. So let's go ahead and open this up. And let's drag on calendar, let's get rid of channel name. And drag on calendar year, I want this guy. Good, okay. Is that right? Looks right. How do you get down to months? Not working so well. So I'm going to go back over here. I'm going to make this a little bit bigger so we can take a look at it. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a hierarchy. So I'm going to create a hierarchy. And it created it down here where I can't see it. There we go. I'm going to call this time hierarchy. I'm going to go up here to calendar year label, if I can find it. Up, there it is. And I want to drag on as well calendar month label. I'm going to drag these guys down here. Come on. There we go. All right, so it's dragged it on, and it's dragged it on in a particular order. It happens to be the way they were arranged in the, it happens to also be the order in which they were arranged in the schema. However, what we do is something smart, is we look at the table, we look at the data, and we kind of figure out what there is the least of and what there is the most of, and organize the hierarchy automatically by the way in which it would naturally sort of fall out. You can change this if you want. You can rearrange these if you want. But by default, it kind of takes a good guess at what the right sort of relationship should be. All right, so I'm going to close this. And now we're going to go back to our spreadsheet. And I'm going to get rid of this because I want to use my hierarchy now. didn't date long. Here's my time hierarchy. Okay, and now I've got a little plus sign showing up there, right? And now I can expand it. Now I've got dates. It's good, right? You want me to look at the order of the dates? The months, I mean. April, August, sorted alphabetically. Still not there. So now what I'm going to do is come over here into data view. And here's my dim date long table. You notice it's got the little keychain thing there. It says it's a linked table. It's linked back to the Excel spreadsheet that it came from. All right, so something's wrong here. So what I want to do is find calendar month label right here. And what I want to do is sort by a different column. I have a couple of options here. I have this thing right here that I can use. It looks like, oh, well, I could sort by that, or I could sort by this thing right here. I'm going to sort by calendar month num. There we go. And I could, you know, you might think you could sort by this, but it turns out this is the year plus the month, and that's not going to be unique in my data set. And I need, if something's going to be sorted like January through December, I need there to be a one-to-one relationship between those, the sort order, the sort information, and the values that are there. So, okay, here we go. Coming back, here we, I'm here. There we go. Nope, wrong spreadsheet. Here we go. And it's sorted correctly. All right? Good. So, we've talked about a couple of things so far. We've talked about relationships and making sure those are right. We've talked about dimensions, how it's important to curate those things, how to keep them up to date. You have a couple of options here. How many of your business users would understand how to curate a relationship or a dimension? No hands going up. Okay, well, there's one. So so this is the kind of the face of self-service BI, right? You kind of go as far as your users will let you, right? And how much you want to hand off to them. We've provided tools so that there's things here that they can do for themselves. And then there's the gap that you can fill where you can kind of move in and kind of make space where you can make space for them to work, and then you can do things to make things work right for them. At Microsoft, we have a finance manager who's responsible for HR, for instance, and they do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of curating some of their dimensions and the relationships and things like that, but then they work in partnership with IT to get the right things provisioned. And one thing this finance manager does is he publishes a single Power Pivot workbook, and then at the beginning of the year, and then for the rest of the year, people can just go to that one workbook and kind of get it sliced and diced the way they want, but he doesn't have to do any more past that point. But he works pretty close with IT to get the right thing sort of provisioned in the right way. He doesn't always make the right choices with respect to what the relationships need to be. He doesn't understand some of those concepts, but once you give him the spreadsheet, he can help co-develop the work that needs to go forward. All right, so that's dimensions, and that's hierarchies, and that's relationships. So now let's talk a little bit about formulas. We've shown you some examples of formulas. That's not what I wanted to do. So I have a nice start here, but what I want to do now is I want to put in percent. I want to say, well, what percent is 2007 of the products that are here? So I need to write a formula. Now, we just talked about the fact that this filter context thing focuses down all of the calculations around the single cell. But if you want a percent to be a total of something like a column total, then you have to do some other work to get there, right? You have to change that filter context in order to do those kind of calculations. So there's a couple ways I could do this. I could either do this in Power Pivot or I could do it in Excel. I'm going to do it right here. And a calculated field has a home. I want it to be on fact sales. I'm going to call this percent of prod. And you've seen a little bit of the syntax so far. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to try a little, just to kind of give you a sense for how the formula language works. I'm going to try something very simple to begin with. Now, you might be tempted to use the column name here. But we don't want the column name, because that's not the operating function inside of that Power Pivot area. In the calculated field area, in the middle of that Power Pivot spreadsheet, the thing that's going on is the sum, and we're filtering it and doing dynamic things with it. So it's the sum that we want. We want the sum of the annual amount, sum of the sales amount. Well, there we go. And I'm going to do something very simple here just to show how this works. I'm just going to add one to begin with to kind of show what happens. And nothing happened. No errors. Well, that's interesting. Normally, it gives me, for the years that are not there, that have no values, it gives me a 1 in each one of those columns. I'm not sure what happened here. Because it tries to add blank to 1, and it adds 1, and I end up... So I want to sometimes check to see if I have a blank value there. So normally I would do... Whoops, I don't want you. Manage. Normally I would test to see if this was blank, and I'd say if... Whoops. I would say if is blank... And then I do say, I just want to leave it as blank. And then I could do the rest of my sales, sum of sales amount plus 1. And that would normally give me what I need. But right now I'm not getting any difference. So I'm not sure what's going on. Not using the values? I am using sum of sales out here. I did create percent prod. That's true, but it's using sum of sales. Normally it pops out the columns. I'm not sure. It did this morning. Not sure what's going on there. All right, but I'm going to do percent. I'm going to change this now to a percent, a real percent. So you can see that working with the sum, is the important thing. I want to divide by. And here, what I want to do is I want to change the filter context, like I was saying. So what I want to do here is type calculate. And what calculate does is it allows me to change the filter context for a given formula. So here I'll say sum of sales amount again, comma, and I want to relax the filter context for the dim product dimension. And this will allow the filter to work over all of the dimension, all of the product dimension, in order to calculate the. There we go. And I go to the second fact table, there we go. All right, so my percent is showing up, and this isn't quite formatted the way I would like. So I can change the format here. There you go. All right. Yes. Yes. The one key point you should be getting here is whether I do it with the Power Pivot tab or whether I do it in Excel, from a calculated field perspective slash measure, it's the same. Okay? If I use native Excel functionality, if I come in here and I do something like make this all say bold, that's local. But anything that I do on calculated fields percentage is going to move throughout the entire model. All right. So that is calculated fields. Now, I want to do a little bit more here. I want to do a Power Pivot. I want to do a KPI. So we've talked about four things now. We've talked about the three dimensions, relationships, hierarchies. We've talked now a little bit about calculated fields and how powerful they are. Actually, let me show you one other thing. I do not have any calculated fields. Interesting. Where did they go? Let me bring up this other spreadsheet really quick. I want to give you a sense for the types of formulas that you can create. Now, this spreadsheet that I'm showing you here is available for download. It comes along with a white paper on writing DAX formulas. And if we go over here, we can see that we have a pivot table with some slicers. And I need control. This is showing some of the financial calculations: month to date, quarter to date, year to date, last year, prior year, month to date. Okay, this is some of the other kinds of formulas you can do. This is showing hierarchies. This is ranking. Now, this will actually go out and get the value here, compare the rank, and compute a rank for you. And then I sorted this in Excel. This will give you the top values within a range. And this will give you a parent-child relationship. Oops, this is all selected. And then this will give you parent-child kinds of relationships across tables. Okay, so let's go back here. I suspect I need to save this. And reopen it. Something's not right. While we're waiting for this to happen, any questions? Yeah. So what was the question? If I want to use the... Yes. To reuse the date table? You can provision it in a local site where people can, when they go to build their Power Pivot workbooks, they can just connect to it as a data source and connect it the way I did. Or, frankly, you could leave it for some businesses. You could just leave it in the workbook itself. There we go. Okay, let's try opening this again. And let's see if it thinks I have... many calculated fields. There they are. Okay, so I got a little confused there. Not sure why that happened. So let's go ahead and create a KPI. I'm not sure what's going on there. Okay. Well, let's try creating another calculated field one more time. Table 5. Oh, I know what's going on. Just a second here, I think. And I want to close you too. Any other questions while this loads? Okay, let's just double check this. It's right there. Close that. Click on that. New KPI. There we go. Okay. KPIs. So KPI base field. Now this is a point I wanted to make earlier. You notice that my implicit calculated field does not show up here, all right? This can only work on explicit calculated fields. So you remember I did clicked on sum of total cost and I wrote percent prod. So I'm going to use percent prod here. And a KPI is measured with relative to something else. So I could use another calculated field or I can use an absolute value. In this case, I'm going to compare percentages. So I show you how to work with percentages. And you can see here that right now, if it's below a certain number, it's bad. And it's OK in the middle, and it's green. And so you have different options here with respect to how you show it. So I'm going to pick this one. I'm going to bring it down to, say, 4%. This guy down to 10%, I'm going to select this. Now it's going to show it up here, not in the form we want. Here it is here. Drag it on like here. There we go. I thought I got rid of this guy. There we go. Great. All right. Oh, so this is one of the properties that you can set is KPIs. Another thing that you can set is, if we go in here to Power Pivot, now let's pick dim store as an example here. Let's look at diagram view. Make sure we have the right one. Yeah, I want dim store. Okay, so when you're working with Power View, there's some things we can do from a default perspective to have things show up in the right way. When I drag out a dim store onto a PowerView worksheet, I'd like it to not just show some key number or something like that. I'd like it to always bring out certain other information. So what I can do is I can say, well, here's the store key. Yeah, I want that, but I also want, where'd it go, the store name, for instance, and the address here, because that's kind of how I think about it. And then I can come in here. We say that store key is the row identifier, and store name is what I care about here. So now when I go back to Excel, and if I go to insert Power View, so here I have a Power View, and if I go to Dim Store, if I double click on it when it gets warmed up here, it will automatically add the store key, the name, the address, and the address line every time. If I just double click on that header, I can go down and pick specific ones if I want, but from a standpoint of getting things done quickly, just double click on it, and it's kind of a quick thing. So those are the properties. So there's KPIs, there's properties you can set around reports, and those are the five things you can kind of do to build up your BI semantic model. All right, so what else? We have all of this available for working with SharePoint. And there's two ways in which things can get added to SharePoint. I can either simply add my PowerPivot workbook directly to the PowerPivot gallery. And you see right down here, I loaded this up last night because it takes about 10 minutes, I think, to load it and for it to start coming up. But you'll notice here, if I click on this, I have now an Excel Web Services UI that allows me to work with this directly, okay? And I can, just like I could, before, I can drill in, I can drill up, I can actually work with this directly. So from a publishing standpoint, this is pretty powerful. I can also, if you look over here, I could open it directly in Excel, I could create a PowerView report, or I could choose to manage it. And here I can set the frequency by which this data gets refreshed. Okay? If you upload a new PowerPivot workbook or whatever, it'll go back and look at it again from an external source. From a connection standpoint, yeah. So, let's see. I didn't want to close that. I wanted to show this other piece as well. Now, but this first page is something else. What I just showed you is the ability to take PowerPivot workbooks and move them up directly. So end users, business users, can kind of do that. If you help them build the right BI semantic model, they can be in more of the business of managing it and uploading it, right? There's another option as well, because there's a 200 meg file size limit for SharePoint. Now, if you have a full analysis service running somewhere, what you can also do is upload a BISM link, And this, just like the experience you saw for Power Pivot itself, will load the same kind of experience for Power View over a tabular model. Now, what's interesting about this, it's pretty simple to create. If you go to Files, Upload New Document, and you say, I want to create a BI semantic model connection. This will be a connection to your analysis services story. So here you'd put in a file name, the name you want it to be saved as in the SharePoint environment, the URL, the database that you're connecting to. And that will actually create one of these files that users could then connect on to get to the PowerView reports as well. Okay, so then let's go to here. Let's go here. So this is your administration console in SharePoint. And from here, now you have a new entry down here, the Power Pivot Management Dashboard. If you click on that, it will bring up a dashboard that shows you what's going on with the workbooks that are there. It shows infrastructure health. You can go ahead and get this nice report on activity of workbooks over a period of time. So over here, over some period of time, you can see what number of users, number of queries. You can kind of pause this and ask the question, should this really be an analysis service instead? But you can kind of get a good sense for actually what's going on from a workflow perspective with your service. And similarly, I think I have this up already, you can get a pivot report on what's going on with actual what's going on with your, maybe it's not warmed up here all the way, just maybe that's what's going on. Here we go. There we go. It wasn't warmed up. You can actually see who's using it and number of queries that they're getting at. Great. Any questions about what you've seen so far? Okay, so one last thing. Last week we announced at SQL Pass the availability of the BIDS BI project, analysis service project, early next year. And this is a preview of it. This is the same model that we were looking at here for Excel. All right? Now, you have most of the same functionality. There's a few things you have here that you don't have in Excel, partitioning, for instance. But for the most part, the experience is the same. But this is sitting inside Visual Studio 2012. Okay? And again, so same basic experience, calculated measures. And I have the same ability to write formulas here that I do in Excel. I can work entirely within Visual Studio if I want. If I want, as a starting point, to have work with an end user more directly using Excel, which is an environment that they're familiar with, to kind of take them to the level of what they're comfortable with, I can kind of prototype with them, work with them directly. And then, when we're at a point where we're sort of done, I can import all the work that I've done in Power Pivot directly and bring it into my Visual Studio environment, right? So similarly, import from multidimensional, as a starting point. Then, of course, what you get here that you don't get in Excel, of course, is the ability to work with other project types, like an SSIS project or whatever that's going to be moving the data and provisioning it in the right sort of way. Okay, that's what I have for presentation. Let me turn, there's a couple more points that I'd like to get to here. From a resources perspective, there's the DAX white paper, which, is that showing up there? Yeah, there's the DAX white paper that has a great sort of description of how to use DAX and has a lot of great examples in it. And along with that comes both the white paper and that spreadsheet that I was showing you. If you want to, there's another blog site, Casper DeYoung, if you know him. He's on my team. He has a blog post on how to get started with DAX in 30 minutes. And then there's a great website that we recommend, powerpivotpro.com, that talks about both PowerPivot and SharePoint and has the occasional movie quote. Working with the team, of course, bugs always go to HTTP Connect. However, we are looking at features for the BI Pro here in the near term. If you are interested in talking to us about those features or interested in surveys, if we'd like to talk to you about what's important to you and what's not important to you, send email to me, lanced@microsoft.com, and so if we can kind of get you in the list of people that we'll talk to about future features. Okay, with that, we'll turn the time over to questions. Yes, if you can come up to the mic, they would like that. Then other people can hear the question.
In Excel 2010, it seems like PowerPivot data connections are different than data connections.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do a PowerPivot refresh, right?
Yeah.
I can only do a PowerPivot data connection.
Correct.
In 2013, are they still two separate things?
There's one. So the question was, in 2010 and the PowerPivot add-in, yes, it's true, our connections were separate because we were a separate add-in, and now they're all sort of consolidated. Sure.
So that performance point dashboard, it seems like if I want to give people access to it, they need to be farm administrators, or I need to give them a lot of access to the SharePoint central admin.
For the access to which site? PowerPivot dashboard, I'm not sure about the privileges that you need to grant, but generally you shouldn't have to grant admin access to people to publish there. Yeah, you shouldn't have to give them the, so I showed you two sites. I showed you the SharePoint gallery, and then I showed you the administration. The administration is for administrators. Well, if it's a SharePoint list data source, you're going to have to spend more time on relationships, right? How do you identify a column so that it can be joined up with other dimensions, for instance? Oh yeah, all possible. Once it's brought into Power Pivot, it doesn't care, right? It just needs a way to be able to identify what it should bring in for a calculation. Yeah. Yep. Right. I didn't show that because that's really kind of a more of a dev thing. What you can do in the self-service sort of BI world, the story that we have today is that what I can do is I can republish my PowerPivot workbook back up to the SharePoint gallery. But I typically have to, give it a different name is the issue, so. Yep. Any other questions? All right, thank you everybody.